Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for the West Point, Virginia Public School Board for paying former high school teacher Peter Vlaming over $500,000 to settle a wrongful termination lawsuit he filed after they fired him for refusing to use a student's preferred pronouns. The 7-year French teacher claimed that being terminated for refusing to refer to a transgender student as male when he was identified female at birth was a violation of his constitutional religious rights, and the Virginia Supreme Court agreed with him. During class, Vlaming avoided the issue by only referring to the young man in gender-neutral or circumlocutory ways so that he would neither have to say his true now gender nor say the gender of his birth, thus coyly trying to avoid the issue entirely. But as you all learned in your preliminary Wokeolite training, silence is violence. And anything other than openly and fully endorsing a person's current gender of the moment is a very serious gender crime, and Vlaming got fired for the word violence he engaged in. Now, of course, we also lay heavy blame on the court for siding with him, inexplicably. But really, it's the school board who deserves the blame because they gave up the fight. They could have appealed to the United States Supreme Court. They could have dragged their feet on paying. They could have done all sorts of things to fight this outrageously transphobic, dead-naming, misgendering fascist and his blatantly money-grabbing lawsuit. But of course now, other backwards and repressive teachers everywhere will feel emboldened to inflict similar psychological torture on their students by using no pronouns at all, because the West Point Public School Board caved and rewarded this outrageously non-inclusive behavior. So yes, the Virginia Supreme Court and Peter Vlaming get our disapproval, but the school board gets the total boot. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, Margaret Brennan, the host of Face the Nation, for her bumbling and counterproductive performance as co-moderator of this week's vice presidential debate. Now, normally we would give Margaret a pass. She's been a consistent ally of our cause, especially during COVID. And of course, as a female host of a Sunday morning network TV news show, she officially has immunity level 3B. But of course, this is not immunity level 4, 5, or 6, the latter of which we reserve for the truly untouchable, such as Kamala Harris, Michelle Obama, and George Clooney. Let's start with the most obvious of Brennan's virtue sins: the hard-nosed fact-check of Tim Walz over his false claim that he was in Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square protests in 1989, which, of course, he was not.
Many times I will talk a lot. I will get caught up in the rhetoric.
Now, yes, he obviously lied, but precisely because this is known, it was horribly wrong of Brennan to point it out by direct questioning and following up and asking again when he didn't answer the first time.
I've not been perfect, and I'm a knucklehead at times.
Unacceptable. But it was worse than that, because at a later moment in the debate, when talking about gun control, one of our five holy policy positions, Walz made one of the worst gaffes of the entire evening.
Become friends with school shooters. I've seen it.
Oh, dear. Unacceptable. Unacceptable. Now, obviously, what he meant was that he had become close to the victims of school shooters, and any reasonable person would have understood that. But instead of letting the gaffe metastasize into a viral meme as it did, Brennan should have recognized the danger and nipped it in the bud by stopping the debate and asking him gently if that's really what he meant to say, poor fella, since he had clearly become rattled by the bright lights and the pretty girls and the empty auditorium, and she should have helped the cause by calming him down and holding his hand while he got himself uncaught from all the rhetoric. But the real virtue sin was early on in the debate when Margaret fact-checked J.D. Vance for something he said that was actually correct, smugly tried to move on, and then cut off Vance's mic when he tried to clarify his position.
Thank you, gentlemen.
The CBP app has not been on the books.
It's something that Kamala Harris created.
Gentlemen, the audience can't hear you because your mics are cut.
To be clear, we have no problem with any of this in principle. The problem was the horribly clumsy way she did it. It was so obvious and inartful, especially after CBS had agreed to not conduct in-debate fact checks, that she left herself exposed to criticisms of bias and even made people feel sympathy for Vance. Come on, girl! You know you have to at least put on a show of impartiality, and it was the utter ineptitude of this interaction which requires us to chastise her out of the fold. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend!
Finally, our strongest praise this week is for the New York Times and its delightful decision to publish the opinion piece by their nonfiction book critic, Jennifer Zelay, entitled The Constitution is sacred. Is it also dangerous? She makes several important points about the anti-democratic flaws of the Constitution, such as that a person can be president without a majority of the consent of the governed, or that the Supreme Court can strike down a woman's right to make her own health care choices when the three key justices making that decision were only confirmed by senators representing 44% of the U.S. electorate. But the real power in her piece is the way she explains that the entire framework of the Constitution is not some neutral, objective, apolitical compromise, but in fact embodies extremism and repression masquerading as fairness and historical objectivity. Just ask yourselves, if the Constitution were really neutral and an originalist reading of it didn't take sides, why do Republicans so vehemently defend it and Democrats so eagerly criticize it? Just because a bunch of dead people 235 years ago made a deal, why should that bind us today? What she points out is that the so-called originalism is really just a form of constitution worship aimed at the writings of a bunch of repressive old white male bigots from a long time ago who certainly don't share our values today. She's so right. Instead of thinking of the Constitution as a binding agreement on the rules of a republic that has stood the test of time and been the envy of the world, Zelaya and the New York Times are saying it's time to stop being the oldest constitutional republic and start over. If we can't win within the most stable political system in history, it's time to overthrow it. Quit pretending we can ever use the current mechanisms for change to make the really dramatic change we need. Stop honoring the political hand-me-downs of a bunch of dead white homophobic racist misogynists, and let's start from scratch, since revolution is the only way to really establish just and stable governments, as so many revolutions have proven in the last century. So down with the Constitution and up with Jennifer Zelaya and the New York Times and their call for upheaval. Viva la revolution! Si se puede! Liberté, égalité, sororité! Woe unto all who offend!
Woe unto all who offend!
Refreshments this week are provided by, if you can't beat them, join them. Makers of fine adult beverages created from only the highest quality fermented beet juice. Jamie and Mark's brilliant thought experiment was, why make wine out of grapes when you can be more inclusive of all the fruits and vegetables for your alcoholic delicacies, starting with beets? Whether it's their red beet Beaujolais, their sugar beet Chardonnay, or their golden beet borscht spritzer, you just know it's going to taste every bit as earthy as the dirt those beets were grown in. If you can't beat them, join them. You can really taste the virtue.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.